Oh yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. 365 days on the nation. Personal empowerment just for you. Jermaine Man, Marvin Roan and the crew. Coming to you live. We got Dr. Bruce today, Brother George, Sister Benita. Conversation, empowerment, motivation, and whole lot more. Stay tuned. Call a friend. We're growing, y'all. Around the world. Hey. Oh, yeah. Better love.
That's what I got.
I'm telling y'all the truth. There is no better love than for self and kind. Let's examine that for just a minute. When we talk about there is no better love than for self and kind, we're talking about love for one another. And what we do know is that we've been trapped in a system, placed in a system, forced in a system that has tried to take that element away from us. But we're reclaiming our minds. We're recapturing the African mind and the African spirit that was stripped away from many of us, and we are now emerging into African-American empowerment. You can call it color, you can call it black, you can call it Negro. The descendants of African chattel slavery in America, you. That's what this show is all about. It's about developing our people. It's about really coming to a place in our hearts and our minds where we begin to love ourselves again, just as we are. We don't have to buy that American image anymore, right? Not, no disrespect to the culture, but it doesn't fit us. Let's be honest about it, right? When will we get back to our natural greatness, accepting ourselves just the way God created us, as we are the original mankind, to be honest? When we talk about race, oh, race is not important. It's not to us. It is to other people. So let's get on. Let me just say this, right? We got to love ourselves again, and we have to teach it to our children. That has to be a focal point inside a community wherever we are, that we have to begin to love ourselves again. And we can't do this internalized racism thing that's been pressed on us that we did impact our community with. We got to love ourselves again. Now for the tenants of the NAAEA. Our mission, the mission of the National African American Empowerment Association, is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each member, each person, each family, each community, wherever we are. We're going to collaborate, we're going to work together, and we're going to have a base for operation that focuses on development, and developing our people, period. You got that right. So we're going to focus in five areas initially. These five areas are simply the peace concept. Listen, five, politics, a political agenda, of focusing on and understand politics, understand American politics and political system, understand the law and the legal system. Get this, y'all. Understanding how the law and the American justice legal system works so we can navigate it, so we can matador it, and so we can olay it. Let's go over to the E, economics, right? Having an economic agenda and an economic platform. Understanding capitalism and the monetary system and how we can use the resources that's coming in and out of our hands, and that we can tap into the investment market, that we can tap into business and develop infrastructure for our people. Well, we can employ our people. Well, we can have Fortune 500 companies. Well, we're employing individuals from our HBCUs and other universities to come and work with and for us to develop infrastructure for us. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, the A. It's important. The A is you're going to have to get your A together. Listen, A is for athletics. It's health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. That's mental health, physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. We need it. Right. As we look at what we've been through in this country, we got to understand how important our mental, physical and emotional health is. Get your A act together and focus on your health and wellness. It's health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. What are you eating? Do you have a workout plan? Do you have a dietary component in your life? Do you have meditation and mindfulness? Do you de-stress? What is your strategy? Because we need it. And then there's C, relevant cultural programs, just like this one, that teach, train, and develop our people, to educate our people on what we need to do culturally. It's a roadmap, our moral fabric, right? Our value system, like Sister Benita said, our moral compass. We have to develop that, and we can use culture to do that. And lastly is education. It's a comprehensive education. Listen to me, people. We have to educate ourselves again. After we get through understanding the complexity of what we've been done, what has been done to us in terms of conditioning, you better understand your conditioning, right? Your conditioning. And manifest something positive and something good in your life through community development wherever you are. Man, you got to love it because we got to love each other. And now for our Stay Immaculate moment. Hold on, folks. Be right back. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Stan is so right. He's so right. Stan was my co-host for many years. He's with us in spirit. He's still working. But we better define ourselves through our institutions now. We have to put institutions in place that's going to help develop our people mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally, and anything else that you can think about that's going to help us grow. I said it. If we don't, we're going to have problems. And we need to eradicate those problems by developing infrastructure, developing programs and activities that's going to do that on a large scale. That's the work that needs to be done now. And we have to be consistent at doing the work, consistent at providing the resources and supporting one another in our efforts, right? All that backbiting and backstabbing and all that, that's over with. We're going to have to unify and have a collective consciousness. And now, without delay, I bring to you Stan Macklin. No, Brother George. Okay, come on, Marvin. Brother George and the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Man, sometimes I just mess up. Brother George, come on. Bring it, brother. Come on.
Bring it. What?
Come on. Bring it, brother. Welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, brother. I've been blessed and highly favored by the Almighty.
Let me just say this, man. I want to thank you for doing this segment because I think it's really important that we understand the Kwanzaa principles that we're promoting every week, and then the Willie Lynch segment that really wraps it up, brings it home, right? So give it to us, brother.
All right. Thank you very much for the introduction, and thanks for the compliment. Today's Kwanzaa principle is going to be Kujichagulia, self-determination, to define ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Now, what does all that mean? Well, I got this little book that I purchased. And it's called Practicing Kwanzaa Year-Round, Affirmations and Activities Around the Seven Principles. Now, it gives us some meaning to Kujichagulia. This symbol represents patience, self-containment, self-discipline, and self-control. Without these things, we cannot grow to be responsible, well-balanced, and productive members of our family or our community. These qualities, along with honesty and respect for all living things, are essential to the development of our character and help to determine the course of our lives, positive or negative, in this lifetime. And I think that was appropriate. Now, for the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from a book that I've always loved, and recently I got volume two of it. And that's from The Broader Father by Anthony Broder. Anthony Broder wrote a series of papers on different topics. And ultimately, he put those papers into book form, which is what The Broader File is. Now, today, I'm going to read, this is volume two, and it's called Survival Strategies for Africans in America. And it says, empower your mind. See the world through African eyes. As a student in elementary school, I was particularly fond of reading Greek and Roman mythology, especially the fables of Aesop. These stories gave me a greater appreciation of ancient civilizations and helped me understand the extent to which the modern world was indebted to those who studied the mysteries of the universe, life, philosophy, the arts and sciences, thousands of years in the past. As I grew older, I began to see my childhood heroes through different eyes. I was in high school when I discovered that Aesop was of African descent and that his name was derived from the Greek word Ethiop, which means burnt face or referred to the blackness of his skin. I also learned that the Greek historian Herodotus stated that the Pericles were Ethiopian. I was dumbfounded when I read that Europa, the princess for whom Europe was named, was of African ancestry. After I completed my college studies, I began to discover that the ancient Egyptians were really black, that many scholars willingly falsified this reality and portrayed the vast majority of them as white. My first trip to Egypt confirmed the historical falsification. I love Anthony Broder's approach to how he introduced himself to our history and our accomplishments as a people, and how he was able to write books that disprove the lies that this society has to rely on to make itself appear like it's superior to everyone else. But I say all that to say this, that our people have contributed a tremendous amount to human civilization and the systems that we use to function as human beings every day, that we contributed greatly to that. And we need to understand that. So that's my segment, brother. Back to you, unless you have a question.
Yes, sir, you know I do. How do we get this information like Anthony Broder and so many of our other greats, like Dr. Bruce, for example? Their works, right? Dr. Wilson and others, Dr. Clark, how do we get that into the hands and the minds of our people so that we could be influenced properly?
Well, basically, you know, we live in a world of technology now. This is the age of technology. You know, you had the space age when they was going off into space to find out what was there, but we had already been there and knew it was there already. But because it's a technological age, then information is plentiful. So you simply go online and you look those people up, and they should have a list of their books and everything that you can purchase to educate yourself. And they even have some information, like some DVDs or videos that you can look at on YouTube of them speaking. And you could gain a lot of information by looking at one lecture of a person like, let's say, Dr. Clark, or if you wanted to listen to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you could listen to some of his older videos that he did back in the 80s and, you know, and like Dr. Ben. You know, you can go online and you can hear these people speak. And a lot of times, once you hear them speak once, a lot of what they say is going to be almost the same thing in a lot of their future speeches. You know, so getting the book, I think, is of great value because you always want to have that. And you can, you know, but you can learn a lot quickly by looking at someone speak through a lecture. So that's what my suggestions are, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother George. Great segment again. And keep bringing it, brother. Keep bringing it. All right. Let's go on over to Sister Benita. And from the minds of our ancestors, here we go. Oh, yeah.
Bring it. What?
All right. Sister Benita.
Yes. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I want to talk about some ancestors. Welcome. Thank you. I want to talk about the minds of our ancestors, but ancestors that are not so far removed. I want to talk about what Big Mama used to be. I want to talk about Madea, what Madea used to be. See, when I came up, there was nowhere in the world that my Big Mama would curse in front of her children or her grandchildren. And I'm not talking about respectable politics and double standards, but I'm talking about women that were godly women that knew how to hold the family together when we didn't have much money and we had our little shirts and those little shirts would get dirty and my mother didn't have money to go wash. She would take those shirts and put them in the sink and wash them with a bar of soap and then put them in front of a fan and then dry them, then iron them and make sure they was crisp and clean. No excuse that her children didn't have to be clean because she didn't have any money. So I want to talk about this trope that this racist system has dropped on us as black women, strong black women, and what that racist trope has done to our communities. And I wrote this here with the ancestors in mind and what they would say, and it's simply strong black woman. Strong black woman, what we gonna do? Strong black woman, mama talking to you. Strong black woman caught in the vice of the system. Our greatness tied up in a melody that's twisted. The tune goes, I can do bad all by myself. The national anthem, I don't need no help. But deep down, I really want to please. Deep down, I am tired of taking the lead. In this racist system, strong black woman by default means weak black man, destroying our ability to plan. The trick is to keep the chaos going, keep us divided, make us hate our own image while we keep on fighting. But the strong black woman is a racist construct, put there for the family to destruct. Flip the script, put the women in charge. Now the white man's mind control can do the harm. Let's sound the alarm. Now the white man's mind control can do the harm. I was a black woman that had come to the conclusion because of my hurt and pain. I was in a delusion that the black man wasn't nothing but game changer. White woman seeing something. Black women trying to figure out what white women see and why they so intrigued. Perhaps they recognize my black king and is jealous that I am his black queen. Even though the black man is still oppressed, there is love and kindness in his chest. Listen to the rhythm of his heart and the rage will fall apart. Look deep in his eyes and go beyond the lies. Let the truth unfold. There is good in his soul. The time has come for healing for the black woman's feelings. I had to take down that wall that I had built up strong and tall. I was a single parent mother. I know we are in pain, but single parent homes don't change the game. So sister, together, let's try to figure out our lane because we are the answer to the change. This may be a hard to swallow pill, but it's up to us to raise the standard still. Don't confuse the black woman's greatness, who's more than able, with the racist strong black woman label. The system doesn't want the black woman and the black man to come together, because it's in our unity that we stand forever. And so I want to say, as we listen to recapture the African mind, that we come out of our delusion and our pain and our hurt and our misunderstanding and become the mothers that God has called us to be in our homes, and we can stand in unity together. Back to you, Marvin.
Wow. 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 Thank you, Sister Bonita. Man, hey, bring it, Brother George, bring it. Let's move on over. Man, I'm going to say it again. Wow. Okay. Man, woo. All right, let's get Dr. Bruce in here. Okay. Dr. Bruce. Whoa. Whoa, Nita.
Bring
Whoa.
It. What?
Dr. Bruce in. In the meantime, Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Swing it back over to you for a second. Sister Bonita, you there?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, let's I just want to follow up until I can get Dr. Bruce in here. What in the world?
Yeah. You know I'm here. Waiting on you.
Roll that out. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Dr. Bruce is here. But Dr. Bruce, real quick, let me get this question out for this sister. What inspired that piece?
Well, because like Dr. Bridges is saying, we're out of our minds. And as long as we as black women, where the system pits us against our men and got us all thinking and got us twisted and don't realize that the system is pimping us too, and understanding the role that we play for our children and our homes and that we are their first teachers. And so I used to be one of those black women out of my mind, and I'm thankful that I'm in my right mind today, and that's all about being reminded and coming back into my innate natural self and what God has created. So that was the inspiration for that.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you, sister. And that's a perfect segue over to Recapturing the African Mind series with Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show. Thank you, Sister Benita, Brother George.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much, Brother Marvin, and to Brother George, and also thank you tremendously, Sister Bonita, for that introduction to what I'm talking about here today. Hopefully we have a pretty good student turnout today in our classroom here on the African American Empowerment Program, and hope some of those listeners that I told about the program on this past week are tuned in and listening, and will make some comments at the end of the program. And we are going to continue in the book called Recapturing the African Mind that we have been discussing for the last few weeks. And last week we discussed the chapter called The Humanitarian Movement, and we talked about what that humanitarian movement was, which is chapter 4 of my book called Recapturing the African Mind, subtitled An Examination of the Mental Destruction of Africans in America and Throughout the World Caused by Eurocentric Religion and Eurocentric Education. And in that discussion on last week, we talked about how this humanitarian movement that Europeans began was not really a movement of humanitarianism, but it was a movement to stop the ongoing movement of slavery, but to then shackle the minds of the people of Africa with their version of the religion of Christianity. As we talked about earlier, we know and understand that all religions that we know about came from the minds of African people in the Nile Valley, and that the versions of Christianity that we have today is basically a Eurocentric version, and that's what has our mind encapsulated, not the original version of Christianity. And we talked about William Wilberforce on last week,
from which you get the Wilberforce University name in Xenia, Ohio. We talked about Reverend J.W. Cunningham, and we talked about Thomas Fowell Buxton, who authored the theme, The Bible and the Plow. And today we're going to talk about two African men who were impacted by the British humanitarian movement. And the first is a man by the name of Samuel Crowther. And to those who are tuned in, I don't go a whole lot into these people, but I'll give you the information so some of y'all are taking notes and can go look further into information about these people that I'm discussing in my book. But Samuel Crowther was, and that's his last name too is spelled, to those who don't have the book, Recapturing African Mind, we're on page 130 to those who do, page 130 in the book. But Samuel Crowther, spelled C-R-O-W-T-H-E-R, Samuel Crowther. But we're going to discuss him now. Now, some of the humanitarians, quote-unquote, not really humanitarians, but so-called humanitarians, discovered early on that the best solution to reach the minds of Africans and ultimately to claim our resources was to use the already Christianized Africans. And one such example of an already Christianized African was Samuel Crowther, who was to become the foremost exponent for the assimilation of West African culture into the culture of Victorian England. There's no doubt that Crowther was a classic product for the money of Henry Venn and British philanthropy. Now, Henry Venn, we'll talk about him a little later on, but his name is spelled V-E-N-N. And Crowther was a highly trained student of the Bible and as a mind totally accepting British superiority. He was very instrumental in aiding the spread of Christianity and the building of Eurocentric schools in West Africa. And now Samuel Crowther ultimately helped Europeans gain access to the natural resources of West Africa. Now, to go into Samuel Crowther a little bit, which is very interesting, his mind was stolen at an early age and replaced by the mind of his European colonizer. And when I talk about this, I want you all who are listening to think about yourself and people that you know and how our minds in this country have basically undergone the same process of mental miseducation. Okay? Now, Crowther, I repeat, had his mind replaced by his European colonizer. Now, after his African mind was replaced by that of Britain, he subsequently trained other minds into European thinking. This was carried out by the use of the Bible and European miseducation. Now, Crowther was taken into slavery as a child, but was rescued by a British patrol and repatriated at Freetown, Sierra Leone, in 1822. Now, Crowther showed what Europeans always like, especially if they can use it, quick intellect and sober application that earned him quite a few opportunities with European missionaries. And when we think about it, our people, our children, our young people, you and other people, whenever you show some quickness of wit and show that you have some abilities that Europeans can use in the onward progress of their system or their society, then they're going to try to use that. Now, Crowther's miseducation basically came from the Christian Mission Society, or the CMS, the Christian Mission Society. And there were several mission societies in West Africa during the mid-1800s, and this was one of them. And Crowther was even sent to England to further his study for the seminary, and he then later went to Forbay College in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and he became a teacher. Crowther was very impressive to the missionaries and was chosen to take part in an expedition up the Niger River. And Crowther wrote a detailed account of his travels and was later ordained as a bishop in England. He was made a bishop in England, very intelligent brother, and he impressed the missionaries. And he was later posted in 1845 to the mission in Abeokuta, Nigeria. And Crowther became a noted scholar in African languages and translated the Bible out of English into Yoruba. And I talked about a few weeks ago about how when I was in Harare, Zimbabwe, southern Africa, I entered a bookstore and found the Bible translated into the Ndebele language. You see, Europeans have always taken their Eurocentrism, whether it be the Bible or some of their poets or their writers of other types of literature or the historical writings, and will translate those writings into the languages of the indigenous people in whatever part of Africa they may be. If they're in Burkina Faso, which is French-speaking, or in Togo, which is French-speaking, or Senegal, which is French-speaking, they're translated into French. Or if they're in South Africa or in Zimbabwe, where it's English-speaking, they're translated into English. Or Spanish, if it's a Spanish colony, so on and so forth. Europeans will always translate their important literature and writings into languages of the oppressed people that they are trying to control. And if they don't do it, they will get someone like Samuel Crowther to do the same. So Samuel Crowther translated the Bible into Yoruba, and he viewed Christianity as a beneficent tool for economic development. Crowther accepted British attitudes so much so that he abhorred many Islamic practices that were on the rise in West Africa, and he hated many African tribal customs. Now, Samuel Crowther, let me make it clear now, was an African himself, but I repeat, he abhorred many Islamic practices that were on the rise in West Africa, and he hated many African tribal customs, but he himself was an African. But you have to understand, brothers and sisters, that he was an African who had become, as Carter G. Woodson talked about, as Bruce Bridges talked about, he had become a miseducated African, and he disdained his own customs, his own practices. And so Crowther was a prime example of an African mind. As we're discussing in my book here, Recapturing the African Mind, Crowther was a prime example of an African mind that was totally destroyed by Christianity and English Victorian culture. Crowther even shared the belief of Henry Venn that the remedy for African backwardness, as they called it, was to introduce more British habits, and to bring Britain into greater participation in African affairs. It was Crowther who in 1861 played a leading role in persuading the king to cede to Lagos to the British government, you see. And from one of the journals of Crowther that was discussed in a book called The History of Britain in Africa by John Hatch on page 151, Crowther made this statement. He says, "The country abounds with produce. Labor is cheap. If the youths are only taught to prepare them for European markets, our work is done. When trade and agriculture engage the attention of the people, and with the gentle and peaceful teaching of Christianity, the minds of the people will gradually be won from war and marauding expeditions to peaceful trade and commerce." Page 151, History of Britain in Africa by John Hatch. The words of Samuel Crowther. He's saying that if the country, Nigeria, West Africa, is full of produce, cheap labor, but we must prepare them for the European market by teaching them Christianity. So again, as we talked about when we talked about the prospectus for the Society for the Extinction of the Trade of the Slave Trade last week, talked about how Christianity was the tool to be used to ultimately gain control of the resources of Africa. When some people have suggested that Africa might make her way without the paternalism of Europe, Quotha said that this was madness. Listen very carefully now. When other Africans would suggest that Africa might make her way without the paternalism of Europe, Samuel Quotha said, this is madness, which denied the fruits of mankind's progress to needy Africa. He believed that Africa had to ally itself with Europe to be progressive. He didn't think that Africa stand on its own. He believed that Africa had to ally itself with Europe to be progressive. Quotha did not believe that Africa had the knowledge or the skill to improve itself. Samuel Quotha felt help had to come from outside his own community. As I'm discussing this, brothers and sisters, I want you all to apply what I'm saying and what I'm teaching you this afternoon to your own situations in the United States of America. Quotha is saying that Africans cannot make it on their own. He's saying that Africa does not have the knowledge and the skill to improve itself, and it has to have European Christianity. And consequently, Quotha and others he influenced were totally accepting of British superiority. They had been torn from their communities and traditions and reared as Europeans. Think about how we were reared in this country and our thinking in this country. Gratitude for their being saved from slavery was shown in their disdain for their own culture and their love of British culture. Now, I really want you to think about this. Europeans have always wanted to replicate their European societies wherever they have gone. Now, Henry Venn, as I mentioned before, the European mission had as a desire to create a Victorian England in West Africa. What Venn wanted to do was to create a West African middle class, and he also wanted to create African communities of scientific farmers, merchants, and small-scale industrialists, reinvesting their surplus profits in an expanding economy would combine an economic interest in the conservation and utilization of manpower with Christian strictures against slavery. So Henry Venn was trying to replicate Victorian England in West Africa. And even when you go into many cities in West Africa today, especially those that were colonized by the British, you will find the road patterns, the buildings, the designs, the architecture, the engineering feats that were done there. You'll find that they look just like European cities, because that, and this is what is called the a transformation in geography. We call it the cultural landscape. It's when you transform the whole landscape to present the culture of a particular people. And so in West Africa, you find an example of what we call the cultural landscape, in that Europeans have actually transformed the landscape of Africa into European landscape, you see. All right, so we noticed that Europeans quickly learned also that when they cannot do a job, it's easy to get a well-Christianized African to handle the task. For example, in 1841, there was a large majority of Europeans perished from malaria in an attempt to establish an agricultural station on the Niger River. Henry Venn strategically turned this weakness into an advantage by insisting that the Europeans were not the best people to man the stations, but that it could be done better by the already Christianized Africans who were physically resistant to malaria. It was actually a better plan, because now there was a physically more resistant and more familiar African body, but couldn't with a brand new European mind. So when Europeans can transform, alter, or change your thinking, change your mentality into theirs, then you can better you can better push their program than they can themselves. And so this is what Europeans were doing by using Samuel Crowther in West Africa to transform men of the lands in West Africa. Now, there's another brother who was a little different by the name of Africanus Horton. Africanus Horton, H-O-R-T-O-N. And he was born in Sierra Leone in 1835, and he went to school at Foro Bay College and graduated in medicine. And he was a soldier in various West African countries and studied the politics of West Africa. Now, Horton, unlike Samuel Crowther, two men, another one from West Africa, from just about the same place, Africanus Horton combated European anthropologists by logic, biology, and firsthand experience. Now, Crowther insisted that Africa must develop her own independent communities to an equal status of those of Europe. He said, we must develop our own African communities to the status of those of Europe. Nonetheless, though, he did not reject the assistance of the British. He says, and I quote Africanus Horton, there's no physical difference or intellectual difference between the African and European. If the West had, in fact, developed a more advanced culture, this was due to historical and environmental factors, which could be offset by introducing West Africans to the best elements of West civilization. Now, Africanus Horton believed that Africa should establish free and independent states. If trained properly, economic development could be achieved. So what you have here is Samuel Crowther and Africanus Horton, who sound very, 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 very similar to a Dr. Martin Luther King, or maybe a Malcolm X or Elijah Muhammad, you see. So what we're going through today as people in our time in history, you find some very similar people in West Africa and other parts of the world who have similar kinds of thinkings or who differ or who disagree, as Africanus Horton did in his disagreement with Samuel Crowther, or as Malcolm X in many instances disagreed with Martin Luther King. So it's nothing wrong at all with us disagreeing with each other, as long as we as people can work together for the benefit of the whole. So that ends our chapter on the humanitarian movement, and I'm going to just briefly go into chapter 5 before we open up our phone lines. And chapter 5 is a chapter in the book that's called Early Missionary Explorers / Merchants and Colonial Methods of Control. Early Missionary Explorers / Merchants and Colonial Methods of Control. And I, as I did in my other chapters, began this chapter with a statement from Bob Marley. And Bob Marley says, to divide and rule could only tear us apart. To divide and rule could only tear us apart. And as we go into the discussion of early missionary explorers and merchants, we'll see exactly what how that statement by Bob Marley in his song, I think it's in his song called Zimbabwe, to divide and rule could only tear us apart. All right, as we begin chapter 5, to those who have the book on page 35 of Recapturing the African Mind, one of the pioneer missionaries and explorers of Africa was David Livingstone. Now, Livingstone was born in Scotland and spent almost 30 years of exploration in southern Africa, and he was sent there again by another mission society. As I said before, I'm going to mention some of those. I mentioned the Christian Mission Society that sponsored Samuel Crowther, but then there was the London Missionary Society, or the LMS, that sponsored exploration by David Livingstone in Africa. This part of Africa, southern Africa, where Livingstone went, was totally unknown to Europeans. And like other missionary tools of Europe, Livingstone took his mission very seriously. And his mission was to stop the slave trade, as they did in the humanitarian movement that we talked about earlier on. And he was to stop the slave trade and to explore places unknown to him. Now, let me just mention Livingstone here for a minute, because as we talked about on last week, we have William Wilberforce, who introduced the bill into the House of Commons for the abolishment of the slave trade. And Wilberforce, of course, is the name of a university in Xenia, Ohio. And Livingstone, after David Livingstone, is the name of another university in Salisbury, North Carolina, called Livingstone College, or Livingstone University, named after David Livingstone. So, hey, very interesting. That's right, Brother Marv. African people have always, until we break away and cut the umbilical cord from that's attached to the European controlling mind, until we cut that cord and go on our own and begin to think for ourselves and analyze for ourselves, then we will always be naming our buildings, our programs, our organizations after European. Europeans, we'll be calling it Alpha Kappa Alpha. We'll be calling it Delta Sigma Theta. We'll be calling it Omega Psi until the day I die. We'll be calling it Kappa Alpha Psi. We'll be calling it Alpha Phi Alpha and all the Greek letter fraternities and sororities, while not understanding that the Greek, the foundation of Greek fraternities and sororities is Ethiopia, is Africa, which we don't have time to go into now, but the labels or the names or the titles were put on by Greek letters, you see. So Livingstone is the name of a college after David Livingstone, who went to South Africa and adventured and explored there. And Livingstone traveled back and forth from England to Africa, and he became a consulate to the British government, and also he was a missionary. And I wanted to mention some of these different David Livingstone also did a lot of writing, and his writing affected many Europeans in Britain and Scotland and England. And one was that, and I quote him here, Livingstone said that Africa was indeed a dark, dangerous, and savage country that needed European civilization. He said that Africa was a dark, dangerous, and savage country. Now, he said country. We know better. A dark, dangerous, and savage country that needed European civilization. Another was that these missionaries, explorers, which our chapter is about, and traders were of sterling quality and character. He said that these traders, these explorers, these white missionaries were of sterling quality and character. And this reasoning, gathered from the reading of Livingstone's writings, guaranteed to European Christian societies that their missions were blessed by God. They believed that their missions were blessed by God into Africa. And I'm going to just, and the role of European missionary groups was also important in the extension of European imperialism in Africa. Let me repeat that. The role of European missionary groups was also important in the extension of European imperialism in Africa. And during the 19th century, there were several of these European missionary groups operating on the continent. And I listed about seven of them here. Number one, this particular group was operating in Africa, was the MMS, or the Methodist Missionary Society. Another was the Church Missionary Alliance. Another was the Church Missionary Society, CMS, the one that Samuel Cotha was a part of. Another one, the American Presbyterian Church. They had a stronghold in Africa, too. Number five, that was what was called the Catholic Missionary Societies, So they had a Catholic Missionary Society and a Church Missionary Society. Number six was one called the White Fathers. The White Fathers, I repeat, the White Fathers. And those of you all who are Catholic, y'all refer to the priest, your father, your daddy. In my book, Recapturing African Mind, in my preface, I talk about how when I was a student at North Carolina Central University, and I, it was just horrific to me to hear the black students referring to this white Catholic priest as father. His last name was Scherer. They were referring to him as Father Scherer, Father this, Father that. And I had come along during the time and I was reading Huey P. Newton and reading about Fannie Lou Hamer and Muammar Gaddafi and studying the Black Panther Party. So to hear African students referring to this white man as their father was terrible to me. But there was an organization of church members in Africa called the White Fathers. And then number seven, there was another one called the Catholic Ghost Fathers. So all these European missionary groups operated in Africa in trying to get control of the African mind. And once the various missionary societies gained total influence upon the minds of Africans, then they would wrap themselves into European culture on all levels. Once the various missionary society gained control upon the minds of Africans, these Africans would wrap themselves into European culture on all levels. And this would occur even in situations when it appeared that Africans were thinking and acting independently. You might think you're acting independently and thinking for yourself, but you're not really. Now, as I begin to conclude here, before we move on into something else, another phase of our program here, the African American Empowerment Program, I want to quote Walter Rodney. And to those of you who are not familiar with this brother, he's one that you should be familiar with, Walter Rodney, R-O-D-N-E-Y. I'm spelling it to make sure that people listen and who want to look this information up later, do your own research. Walter Rodney was a Guyanese author from Guyana. When I say Guyanese, to make sure you understand, was a guy. It's a country in north on the northern coast of South America. But Walter Rodney, the Guyanese author, wrote a book called How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. And just a little bit of information about Walter Rodney, born of regular working class parents, father, seamstress, mother was a tailor, the other way around. They both sold clothes for white folks. But he went to school in London and began and eventually got his doctorate and went, taught at Dar es Salaam University in Tanzania. He also taught in Kenya. And he authored a book called How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. And I want to quote that book just before we go to our phone lines. Walter Rodney, in his book, he says, and I want you to keep in mind to those who are tuned in and who are listening and who are learning from our program here in our review of Recapturing the African Mind, we said very early on in our discussion that European people used two basic institutions to gain control of the minds of not only African people, but any people of color around the globe, be it people in China, Japan, in Caribbean, with the Caribs, with the Arawaks, with the Navajo, with the Cherokee, with the Choctaw, with the Chickasaw, with any other African groups around the world or so-called Native American groups in this country, Europeans always use two particular institutions to control our minds, and that is the church and the school. And as I understood that, Walter Rodney understood it too. And I want you to listen for it in the quote I'm about to give you here from Walter Rodney's book, page 26 of his book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. And he said, at the social and cultural level, there are many features which aid in keeping underdeveloped countries integrated into the capitalist system, and at the same time hanging on to the apron strings of the metropoles. I'm still reading now from How Europe Undeveloped Africa. He further says, the Christian church has always been a major instrument for cultural penetration and cultural dominance. In spite of the fact that in many instances, Africans sought to set up independent churches. I want to read that statement again. He said, Walter Rodney, the Christian church has always been a major instrument for the cultural penetration and cultural dominance, in spite of the fact that in many instances, Africans sought to set up independent churches. Continuing on, equally important has been the role of education in introducing Africans to serving the capitalist system and to subscribe to its values. I'll repeat that again. Equally important, Rodney saying, and he said equally important to the Christian church now, has been the role of education in introducing Africans to serving the capitalist system and to subscribe to its values. Recently, the imperialists have been using new universities in Africa to keep themselves entrenched at the highest academic level. So you see it in this, end of quote. You see here at, in that statement that Walter Rodney discusses the Christian church and he discusses education, as I have been discussing. Now, as we cross-reference here, to those who have the book, Recapturing the African Mind, we're going to go to page 123. We're going back for a minute to look at what Sister Marimba Ani says in her book, Yorugu. Let me spell the name of her book in case some of y'all might want to get a copy. Marimba Ani, A-N-I, her last name. First name, Marimba, just like it sounds. Marimba Ani. In her book, Yorugu, Y-U-R-U-G-U. In her book, Marimba Ani says, as we cross-reference here with Recapturing African Mind and with How Europe Undeveloped Africa by Walter Rodney, Marimba Ani says on page 168 of her book, she says, Christianity was a more refined tool for the selling of European imperialism. There are certain traits that have made for the success of European civilization in its quest for supreme dominance and control of others. It is a culture based on an ideology of superficial change. This allows its hegemony to expand while being maintained. So she says, Christianity, that's the end of a quote, Christianity was a more refined tool for the selling of European imperialism. Same thing that Walter Rodney said, same thing Bruce Bridges said, same thing Dr. Kaji Woodson said, as he talked about the his book, The History of the Negro Church, and various other writers. So at that point, I have more that I'll bring out maybe in our discussion, question and answer, and a good quote at the end of the program I have from Walter Rodney. But right now I'm going to turn it right back over to Brother Marvin again here, right on time at the top of the hour as we plan to do. And Brother Marvin, back to you.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Man, it's African-American empowerment through education. You can't beat it, right? This online classroom, all you got to do is follow through the book, listen, learn, go do your research. Dr. Bruce, I want to ask you a question before we go to the lines. You mentioned education in the church, but in chapter 4, before you wrap that up, you talked about two influences that I want you to follow up on real quickly. And that is, you mentioned the disdain for our own culture, and then the utilization of Christianity as a tool that you double back on with Dr. Marimba, Ani. So can you speak to how this disdain for our own culture has led us down this road to how we see ourselves and how we're influenced before we go to the lines?
Okay, yeah, and I'll do it just briefly. Of course, one thing, too, about this European Christian culture that that we were given on the continent of Africa and that we were also given on the plantations of Alabama and Mississippi and North Carolina, South Carolina, and other plantations in this country, Christianity has always taught. And when I say Christianity, we always have to, as you do a very good job at it, Brother Marvin, Christianity from the European perspective has always taught that its way of doing things and its ways of interpreting things and seeing things and its analysis is superior to what Africans already had. And by us thinking that their way is superior to our way, then that's going to automatically drop our beliefs on a lower level and eventually make us kick them out of our thinking altogether. As an example, if we saw the movie Roots many years ago, whenever Africans would on the plantation, whenever black people would do something and it was more out of the African tradition or something they had brought over from the continent of Africa, as Kunta Kinte did, for example, it was looked down upon by other people on the plantation who had grown up under the Christianity here in this country and who had heard nothing else. And so they thought it was inferior or less than. For example, this is how we became into wearing European clothes, of course, because we thought that we were taught something was wrong with our own African attire. European Christianity with all the religion, as I read in my book a few weeks ago, we couldn't speak our own language. Our languages were inferior to languages of the European. So everything that we did and everything that was a part of us when coming to this country was taught to be disdained by African people, and that has spread to us even today. This is why, and I'm giving you another example. This is why, of course, we look at the black men, hairstyles, processes, lye and dye and all kinds of things that we put in our hair to make our hair look more European. Women who were making their hair look like white women, all kinds of things. Now, young people, which I really like, are beginning to, and I always think about the fact that when you look at basketball teams or football teams today, when I say today, in 2019, 21, 2022, 2018, 2017, 2016, and compare those teams of the NFL or the NBA to the teams back during the time when people like Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain and Earl Monroe and Oscar Robertson and Elgin Baylor, and some of those brothers were playing basketball, and when Jim Brown was playing football, and some of the other football players we know about. Look at how they look. Just look at them from the neck up, and look at the football and basketball players today from the neck up. Look at their heads. Look at the hair. Look at the beard. Look at the faces. Now black people are beginning to understand in small, subtle ways, if they could get their minds together, to go with the hairstyles and to begin to think and act the same way that they're showing themselves physically. They could begin to think more African and black and independently, we'd be much better off. But if you make those comparisons, that's because many of us began to realize that there's nothing at all wrong with our culture, our heritage, our hair, our looks, the way we dress, and those things that we already had, you see. But the Christian religion destroyed a whole lot of that. And as we always say, not the Christian religion, but we're talking about the European version of Christianity.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I do want to thank you for helping us to recapture our African minds. And I like stating it that way, Christianity from the European perspective. Let's choose to use that because I think we can pinpoint it that way. And we won't have to shift or move away from the point that we're trying to make. So I think that's great. All right, we're going to the lines 845-277-9250. I'm going to say it a little slower just in case you want to dial in and ask a question for Dr. Bruce. 845-277-9250. This is how we do it on the question and answer part. If you're on the line, we just, hey, we'll call the last four of your number. And if you're there, all you got to do is say, hey. And if you don't want to talk, you say, I don't have any questions. And just tell us where you're from, where you're calling from, and where you're listening at. We have a listenership around the world now, so the map or the globe is lighting up. We're going to start with 8502. We'll start with 8502 today. It's the Empowerment Network. We got Dr. Bruce live and on the line, 8502. If you have a question,
good afternoon. Good afternoon, brother.
Good afternoon.
Marvin. And
hey.
Dr. Bridges, it's always wonderful to listen. When he was speaking about Samuel Crothers, it made me think about when Dylann Roof went in that church and shot those nine people in Charleston, South Carolina. By the next day, they had black preachers standing up saying to forgive this man and to not resort to violence and to let the authorities take its course by the next day. And then by the same token, when Reverend Jeremiah Wright was speaking truth to power, President Obama had to distance himself from him and reject him.
Sure did.
But whenever you find any type of racial incident, they seem to be able to find some black preacher to come out and say, keep calm and forgive people.
That's true, brother. Thank you for your call and your comment. I would like to say before I shifted to Dr. Bruce that in this system, our black preachers have always been used as a voice and a mouthpiece for the system. And so I don't see it being much different now. I'm not knocking preachers, but I think we have to educate our people and empower our people from a cultural perspective that have them to liberate themselves mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally, and spiritually. Dr. Bruce, you got a comment? Thank you, brother.
No, not really, except that I agree with brother 100% in terms of his comment. So that's about it. I agree.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. We're going over to 7841. You're live. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Hotep.
All right, let's move. Oh, Hotep, how you doing, sister?
I'm good. Hope everybody's doing well. I don't have a comment.
Well,
I'm just grateful and enjoy listening to them.
All right. Thank you. And keep listening. Keep listening. Stay plugged in. Thank you, sister. All right, let's go down to 6511. 6511, you're next. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm just listening to the show, learning a lot of the show, enjoying. No, I have nothing to say today, but I'm enjoying the show. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for calling and keep listening.
Thank
you, sir. All right, 845-277-9250. You got a question or comment for Dr. Bruce. We're going over to 3953. You are online. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Brother Marvin, it's Will. How you doing?
Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm doing good. Just gaining knowledge today. That's all I'm doing.
All right. All right. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. And stay plugged in, brother.
All right.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go 8022. 8022 is the Empowerment Hour. African-American Empowerment, 8022. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Hello, I am calling from Maryland. I had some concerns with the brother who spoke about the black ministers saying to the black people, you know, during a crisis to keep calm. When you look at who has the most military power or the guns or whatever, it seems to me that people of color would be outnumbered. And so until you can get your forces together and ready to go into battle and be prepared, ready, prepared, and go into strike and with power, then, you know, I don't know if this we should be knocking what the black ministers are saying to their people. So that's just an observation on my part, and I would like to hear more about that in the future. But anyway, it has been a good show, and I'm truly enjoying it each Saturday. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sister. And that's a great point, right? We ain't ready to fight nobody, to be honest. I mean, we do a good job of doing it to each other. But I don't know about anybody else.
That's right. And I agree with the caller too, Brother Marvin. And I also don't disagree with Brother Herbie. I know what he said. I think what he meant was if they're going to at least speak truth to power and stop being so mealy-mouthed and so humbled and so taking the cowardly position, I think is what he's talking about. At least stand up and speak out and say something about it, as opposed to just you know, just saying forgive and forget, and not forget, but forgive and some of those kinds of things. I think in defense of Brother Herbie, I think that's what he's saying.
True. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Sister, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, I
okay,
am.
Okay, good. May I ask a question? How would you
of course.
Suggest that we approach something like that?
Good question.
Actually, I think it probably would have to be a effort made perhaps on local levels. Perhaps you may have to start some type of coalition and set up some goals and objectives and how you want to go about it. But you can't say, okay, this is one city, and okay, let's get upset and do something about this when you don't have the resources to do anything about it. So you probably have to do some groundwork and, you know, started trying to get different little branches, similar, not saying they end up similar to how the NAACP started. It doesn't necessarily have to be the NAACP, but you need to have, like, little local chapters and then start branching out statewide and regional-wide, and it takes time, you know. So this is just a suggestion, a suggestion. And how we go about that is just going to have to take people sitting down, coming together, and then reaching out to the various, say, one local area, for example, could be Charlotte, North Carolina. And Charlotte reach out to Salisbury, and then out, and then you go over into South Carolina, then you go into Virginia. And so it just has to be a very organized plan process in how we address issues like that and how we prepare ourselves. Because we do have a lot of great minds and out there.
Yes. Thank you, sister. That's a great point. Organization is going to be so important, right, in how things roll out for us in the future. I think we definitely have to continue to create alliances and work together for that. Thank you, sister. Great, great comment, and keep listening. All right, Dr. Bruce, any responses to that?
Sister no, Lady, nothing. Except for the fact that I do agree with her, that's all.
All right, let's go over to 3515. 3515, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? All right, let's keep it moving. 3383, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Hi, I just want to say I enjoy the show. I'm learning so many things. I think as the people, we sometimes forget who we are, that we derive from kings and queens. And sometimes we accept things we shouldn't. And I just want to thank Dr. Bridges, you, Marvin, everyone. It's just so informative. And I wish we all, everyone, every black person, to listen to this show, because I really appreciate it.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you. And I think it's up to us to spread the word, right? I think this is a great platform for sharing information, right? It's about African-American empowerment. I don't think there's anywhere else that I can see that's really specifically targeting our community and saying we're going to educate ourselves and we're going to do it on a national level. So, Dr. Bruce, you have a response to that?
Yes, I disagree with the caller 100% and agree with what you just said in terms of us having to really spread it. And I just want to reiterate to all of our listeners, please, please, please tell some friends, tell some relatives, tell other people, tell boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, children, tell people about our program here on Saturday evening, because we're really trying to use this forum to educate our people. Please help spread the word as you, any way you possibly can. And I did want to mention, and it just came back to me, that this past week I went to a conference in Hampton, Virginia, and at that conference I heard some preachers from all over the country who were preaching, and it was called the Hampton Ministers Conference. The Hampton is over 100 years old. Ministers from all over the country, Chicago, Montgomery, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama, Chicago, Illinois, Raleigh, North Carolina, Richmond, Virginia, were there and speaking and had an excellent program. And one thing that I really found missing, which I'm glad Sister, the last caller made me think about, and that is in the preaching and at the conference and in that discussion, that cultural piece was just missing out of. They were the Bible, quoting the scriptures, quoting Genesis, quoting Romans, quoting Deuteronomy, all through the scriptures, excellent knowledge of the scriptures, that an excellent knowledge of the Europeans that they had studied under at Morehouse and the Union Theological Seminary in Richmond. And they had an excellent knowledge of, as they say, the exegesis and homiletics and all those kinds of things. But the one thing that I definitely found missing, which I think is essential, and that is a cultural piece, that culture, that heritage. For example, there was one sister who was speaking who, and I was cheering her on. She was not a minister, but she was a physical therapist, a clinical psychologist, one of the others, not physical therapist. Not physical therapist, but a clinical psychologist, and she was quoting using African proverbs, and she was quoting Genesis, and I was in the audience, which was in a coliseum on Hampton's campus. I was telling her, teach Cush, teach Ethiopia, take us back, take us black. And some of the other people who were there were looking around at me because they didn't see me cheering too much on just the scriptural information, but when she hit with the culture, I urged her on, and they looked at me kind of funny, like, you know, why is he, you know, I don't know. But anyway, that cultural piece has to be put there as a part of it. That was a good brother by the name of Marcus Cosby, in case you want to look him up on YouTube, Marcus Cosby from Chicago, who did a couple of good lectures there. And I did hear him mention Fannie Lou Hamer at one time and maybe a couple other things, but for the most part, that culture was just missing. So that's very important. I don't want to give another lecture. Let's go on to another call because I want to end with a good comment. So anyway,
okay.
I'll let you move on.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce.
I told some people that I saw, I gave them the numbers, so I gave them some numbers now. I mean, I gave Brother George a sister's number who I met at the conference, and a brother who I met, and one from Florida, one from Virginia. So I don't know if they're on or not, but
I'm looking for them. We'll catch up with them, though. They'll catch up with us because we're on the move. I do want to add one thing to our listening audience. Again, your opinion is valued. Right, and that's the great thing about the platform that I want to develop is everybody is valuable, right? And we don't necessarily have to agree or disagree on any and every point, right? But your opinion and your point of view is valuable. And if you want to express it, you have a place to do it because this is for us to discuss our issues or our thoughts or our feelings
or our beliefs with each other. I'm going to keep doing that. So keep calling in, 845-277-9250. I'm going back to 7841. 7841, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Hotep. I'm calling actually from Richmond, Virginia.
All right.
My name is Anubia, and I am glad to hear Dr. Bridges. I'm glad to hear Brother George and yourself and Benita and everything that you guys are doing. I'm grateful and thankful, and big things are coming. I do want to make a couple quick points, right? And I don't want to be too long-winded, but one quick point is I want us to understand the images that the media portrays, particularly as it regards what the brother said about black ministers quick to forgive, and the images that they portray in terms of homegrown terrorism, the images that they portray in terms of what happened on June 6th. These images are particular images that are being portrayed and on purpose. That's real quick and simple. I want us to understand that images in the media are strategic, okay? It's strategic that we could see a mass of white people taking the Capitol over, okay? Because that could not have been shown at that volume. It is strategic when we see a cop shooting a black man or choking a black man. We see that spent over and over and over again. Okay, so let's be careful with that. The other thing I want to mention is the sister mentioned that we may not be ready to fight. And I think it's real important that we understand the mentality behind not being ready to fight. Okay? If a fight comes to us, ready or not, here it comes. Okay? We talked about this a couple Saturdays ago, being ready and preparing ourselves in some form of a concept in terms of just basically readiness, and the term militia came up a few times. There are organizations that do support our community being ready if and when attack comes. I grew up in an environment where we had several different sort of social scientist views on the approach to that. I had uncles who were Black Panthers, and I also had uncles who were part of the NAACP, and I had uncles who were part of SNCC. And I would often hear them debate, I'm not gonna march and be spat upon and turn the other cheek. And then I would hear, I think it's important that we bear arms, right? So these approaches are just that. They're different approaches to the same concept, right? And as social scientists, and a social scientist, for example, that Dr. King was, his approach was pacifist, right? That was his approach. And Huey Newton's approach was, as a social scientist, was a different approach. But either approach, in terms of feeling like we are not ready to fight, I think in terms of how we think and how we prepare ourselves, if a fight comes, we need to be ready. I personally regret that during that invasion in the church in South Carolina several years ago, I regret that there was not somebody there who was ready and was willing to stop him. That is a regret of mine. I regret that there was no one in that supermarket in Buffalo that was ready and could have stopped that. I regret that we are not so-called ready and that we need to be, because it's here and it's now. And if we don't feel ready, then that's a topic we need to get ready, because the fight is coming to us. And forgiveness.
Amen to that.
It's a spiritual matter. Forgiveness is a spiritual matter and should not be coupled with readiness to fight, okay? Forgiveness is a spiritual matter, and it is mandatory for a spiritual height even. But it should not be a forgive or defend. It could be forgive and defend. Hotel.
All right, Hotel, my sister. I think you're right. Got to be ready, right? When we look at Tulsa and other places, just go back in our history, right? I don't think, again, the philosophy has always been don't start the fight, but you got to be ready to defend yourself, your community, your children, and where you live. And again, I think we have to do a better job of understanding the tools that have been used to make us more passive and docile and accepting of abuse of all kinds. All right, we're getting close to the end. I'm going to go over to Brother George. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir.
No more callers.
No more calls.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. My people are not calling in. I don't know what's going on. Okay.
Brother George, you got a comment?
Yes, sir. Well, I just would, like to throw in that I love hearing our people give our views on different things, But see, the major thing is that because we're not, the mass majority of us is not under one umbrella, then that's why we don't have a security force. Like with the Nation, you have the FOI. And with Marcus Garvey's group, you had his soldiers, his policing force, that went through the community. And these types of operations are necessary for our people. You don't have to be the aggressor in order to defend yourself. And this has to be well thought out, for sometime in the very near future. But I wanted to move on because I know you have a short time and Dr. Bridges may have a few words before you close out.
Yes. Dr. Bruce, final thoughts.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Brother. Thank you, Brother George, for leaving me a few minutes just to just close out. What's today's date, Brother Marvin?
Today is the...
Oh, Brother George, what's today's date?
11th.
June 11th. All right.
Yes,
the brother that I spoke about that I think we need to know more about, the brother by the name of Walter Anthony Rodney, was killed on June 13th in 1980. June 13th, which is 2 days from now, he was killed, and I think that's about 42 years ago, he was murdered, assassinated. Walter Rodney, the author of the book, Undeveloped Africa, was given a walkie-talkie that was that had a bomb planted in it, and he sat in his car waiting for a program, and the bomb was controlled remotely, and it blew him up in a car on June 13, 1980. And Walter Rodney, who was killed 2 days from now, 42 years ago, he made a statement that I want to close out with. An overall view of ancient African civilization and ancient African cultures is required to expunge the myths about the African past, which linger in the mind of black people everywhere. This is the main revolutionary function of African history in our hemisphere. And Walter Rodney says, I conclude, every African has a responsibility to understand the system and work toward its overthrow. That's from Walter Rodney, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, Recapture the African Mind, Forward Ever, Backward Never.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And we appreciate you leading our lecture today. I do want to say thank you to all the callers and all the listeners who are listening online and those who called in today. Specifically and especially the sisters, y'all showed up today. I heard your voices. Continue to call, tell a friend, right? We got to do this, and it's us that have to do it for ourselves, right? The work, there's so much work that needs to be done, so much organizing, right? But here's the thing, start with yourself, educate yourself, develop yourself, get these books and start reading them, and empower yourself mentally. Take the A, get your A awareness outside and do some work on yourself. Push away from the table, right, and do some things that's going to empower you. Take care of yourself. Become the best person that you can be. And lastly, join us next week. Oh, we're also doing Empowerment Sunday, right? Empowerment Sunday, we're doing spiritual development, right? Not religion, more of principles, right? So we're going to work on developing principles that we can live by, that we can continue to develop ourselves mentally, physically, socially, emotionally, and culturally to make ourselves the best people that we can be as we continue to move forward, moving out of the African enslaved mind and back to our African mind and our roots. Until next week. And as always, oh yeah, oh.